Talk is an extension of the long-running award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 3:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCVE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Mary Urena, the guest with banter.
Okay. I need just like a regular film. Mary, I've been doing all these eccentric films. Can you throw one out there that people might just enjoy because it's not a typical movie?
Well, I would say that's The Nest, but it is a complex film.
All right.
And one that I think you have to be in the mood to see.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And in The Nest, you might think it's a horror film.
You might, because of the lighting and sinister music at key points.
And I don't doubt that they've kind of promoted that way. It lends itself, and this the home that this family moves to is, gosh, beautiful, but old.
It's old, gothic, country estate manor.
Supposedly in Surrey.
Supposedly in Surrey. Yeah,
but as you're telling me, it's actually Toronto, probably.
The film was, as far as I could tell from the credits, was filmed in Toronto. It's a Canadian and British co-production.
Yeah. And it stars Jude Law. He's the big draw here.
He is. He also serves as one of the executive producers on the film.
And he's a cocky, probably Cockney, though he covers it up very well. And he's a poseur. Reminds me a little bit of our outgoing president.
Just a little.
Right? With his bluster and bluff and his lying.
Yeah. Lack of reality and desire for just more and more.
Yes. And so he's actually come to America and been here for a while to make his fortune.
Which he's made and lost.
Yes, and in fact, nice scene in the cab.
Very nice scene.
Yes.
You know, as we've gone along on this journey with his family, moving from this idyllic suburban existence, it seems, in somewhere in the New York City area, to the countryside of England, and he supposedly has a very big, important job with a trading firm in London. And towards the end of the film, when his character has been revealed as the poser you describe him to be, I would add narcissist to that list of descriptions. He's having a conversation with the cabbie who's driving him home after he was cut out of a business deal because he was just too trying to impress far too much with his tales of wealthy lifestyle and success, which I'm sure in his mind played to, that's what they want to see in me, to see that I'm wealthy and successful.
Yes.
Even though they have no money in the bank. Right. And
I mean, he goes on at that party.
Lives his life on credit. Yeah. He goes on and on
about things that they don't have. And his wife is sitting there taking all this in, and she's just about had it.
She did, as we see. But as exists in many films, there's that pearls of wisdom speech from the taxi
Mary,
cab driver.
Just a little bit over the top, I thought, in exactly that way. And in the way they use the horse as a motif.
Yes. Just to set that comment up, Allison, the wife, somehow through her hardscrabble upbringing has gotten into horses and horse training, riding lessons for others, and she's clearly very passionate about it. And they are able to have a horse come over from the States with her, and they're in the process of building a barn and a riding rink for her.
Yeah.
And she loses the horse at one point during the story, but then they come back to the horse in a way that you're referring to that's just very...
I thought it was awkward.
It's very awkward. It's heavy-handed for whatever point the director and writer, Sean Durkin, was trying to make. And it just leaves you perplexed.
So in the cab, and this kind of rough and ready cab driver who's talking with our Jude Law character, there are several points where the where the cabbie does kind of gloss the what we should be getting out of the film, and what he says is only too obvious, that family is the only thing worth anything. And Law's character says, "I had $1 million once."
Yeah,
and you know, but all of that is way, way too obvious.
It is delivered in a very obvious way. Although I did think there was a moral victory in that the cab driver, if I'm not giving too much away, actually stops and kicks him out of the car because Jude has told him that Jude Law's character Rory has told him that he has no money, right. And he doesn't even have any money on him to pay for the cab ride.
So the cabbie immediately infers that he's not going to be paid.
Yes. He just stops and boots him out.
That was
such a moral victory for everyone in the working class who's been expected to carry someone forward. And he says, "Nope, if you're not going to pay me, I'm not driving you all the way to Surrey."
Here's a typical, another Trump-like moment. When he asks his benefactor, boss, former boss, and he comes back, that he advises him that he should sell his business. What chutzpah to tell this guy who's built it, and that the Jude Law character says that he has a buyer he knows about who would kind of merge the two. But after a few minutes, you realize this is not a good thing for that man who has built his business.
And he treated the company like, let's make a deal, because he wanted to make a lot of money. And I would say, based on what I know of our outgoing president, he's all about making the deal, not necessarily that it's a good deal.
Good. I forgot
or that. You know, it brings forward a really positive outcome for all concerned. In this case, Rory was concerned about the big score for him and his wealth and his desires to not only have the trappings of wealth, but to actually be wealthy again. And something that came up during the film that just to indicate, not only is he lying on the business front, he's lying on the personal front, is that early in the film, when they're moving back to England, Allison is talking to her mother and can't understand why he wants to go back to England where he doesn't have any family. And he actually goes to visit his mother in tenement housing.
Wow.
He clearly doesn't have a good relationship with
her. Oh, my.
But then he invites her into his life to meet her grandson, his son, and Allison's son. And she refuses.
That was a truly odd moment when he went to visit her. And I couldn't – I'm trying to put it together. And as I'm listening to you, I'm putting a little bit more together. I thought crossed my mind that maybe she had money, but she doesn't.
She doesn't.
No.
And that originally crossed my mind too, but the environment in which she's living is...
Well, don't you think
government housing, which usually implies that person isn't of great wealth. And he said he came from nothing.
But this is so much a part of his character. For instance, forcing the move on his wife, who had started a really good career there, and they had a good life there. Now, of course, we don't know how deeply he was in debt and all this. We don't know how that happens. But also the fact that he's doing the same thing to his mother, telling her to transplant herself and go live with him, and he hasn't talked to her.
Well, he's trying to be the puppet master.
Oh, yes.
The other thing that I think is interesting, because this film is set in the mid-1980s, is the relationship between husband and wife, and how even at that time there was deference to the husband's career and moving for the husband's career.
Right.
And, you know, having the hindsight of, you know, 35 years and just seeing that dynamic portrayed it during my lifetime, it gave me pause and made my kind of,
yes.
I had hair on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
It would have stood up.
Yes, right.
Because I just was like, ooh, I don't like that.
And that moment, the great moment between Allison and Sam, her daughter, Allison, mom and daughter, in which, she says about making decisions, "No, I'll just marry a man who will make a decision for me."
Yes.
And mother says, "Are you trying to hurt me?" Because that's exactly what you're talking about.
Well, and it makes you appreciate how the patriarchal society that almost every country in the world has developed under for centuries, you think about the impact that has on our children. They do really watch. They do really learn.
Oh.
And witnessing that type of dynamic with her mother you know, of course she would recognize that. But Sam also had the benefit of growing up post women's liberation movement.
Yes.
Even though the Equal Rights Amendment has yet to be ratified. But she had the benefit of seeing other women role models at that point in our history.
Yes.
Who weren't as deferential as her mom.
Yeah.
And plus she was a teenager, so she had teenage attitude about it.
All right, Mary, now here's a question for you. What is the value of that party scene?
Which party?
Oh, that's a good question. It was Sam's.
Sam's with party.
Her,
oh.
Her peers. No, I understand it as a traditional story. The teenager is rebelling. Mm-hmm. So she invites all of her friends to come, and they have a big party, and they smoke, and they do all that stuff. I saw nothing come out of that. All it did was confirm me, well, she's a teen, and if parents go away, they better be careful. Is that, am I trying to get too much out of it?
The one thing I got out of it was at that point in the film, which is towards the end, and this move to England has caused cracks in the family dynamic to just open mm-hmm. up wide, mm-hmm. that was all of the characters had an arc where they were taken to a very low point. And I think for Sam, that was her low point. And it happens to happen on the same night that her mother walks out of a business dinner with her stepfather. She walks out of it and goes to a bar and drinks and dance and cuts loose. And so both mother and daughter on the same night are bottoming out in a similar way.
That's
so
right.
Kind of like mother, like daughter was how I took it. And that just happened to be Sam's arc.
And we talk about the kid.
Benjamin.
Right.
Yeah.
We talk about them in the schools they go to. We need to talk about that just a bit.
We do need to talk about that.
Because I think it's revelatory.
It is.
And for Ben?
Ben goes to the best private school in the area. And Sam just goes to the public school. And the thing that's interesting is Sam is actually Allison's daughter from a previous relationship. Benjamin is Allison and Rory's son.
Yeah.
So Rory, again, that patriarchal dynamic,
wants
his son to have what he did not have, which is a high-end private education.
Yeah, which, again, it puts me into the Trump mode with Barron and his and his son. Although I think Barron's mom is going to be very protective of him, though I don't know what they've agreed to, the two of them, because I'm waiting for for her book.
Let's not speculate on that.
I know. I don't know if we've done justice to to Rory, to the Jude Law character. I'm getting echoes of Mr. Ripley?
Well, in Mr. Ripley, though, he was someone who was raised. He was the character who was raised with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Okay.
In this case, he's not raised with a silver spoon in his mouth. And as I think I said to you earlier, he is, when I was watching the film, he was such a liar to everyone and trying to create this fantastical existence of wealth and opulence.
Yes.
And making the deal.
Yes.
That I actually thought of our president, outgoing president Donald Trump, and I thought this could be what he was like, only without the silver spoon in his mouth.
And without the finesse.
And without
the finesse. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, and not nearly as good looking as Jude Law. I mean, let's be honest about that.
But you know, I guess that moves me to the point I wanted to make about the Law character. It's worth seeing this film to watch this character. And I think Law does a super job of saying to you, you know, I can see how he could con some people. He does it. His lying is not bold as, let's say, Trump's is. His lying is subtle.
It's subtle, and he delivers, and he is Jude Law.
Yes, right. Yeah. You
know, and so he delivers it in a very wonderful way. The thing that I thought was interesting about Law's performance is he took a character that could have just been completely reviled.
Yes.
But you see through scenes when he goes to visit his mother, who up to that point we think does not exist because his wife and children do not know she exists.
Yes.
And then the scene in the taxi cab and, you know, this realization of, you know, as much as I'm trying to create this fantastical life, I don't know what I want anymore.
And it's not,
and
yes.
it's not satisfying to him anymore. And at that point it was like, you could have not cared. But because of the performance and the glimpses that you see of his humanity, small sparks though they may be, it was an interesting and intriguing balance that at the end of the film, you still feel some sort of empathy for Rory, which I found surprising.
Yeah, and not wanting to give it away, even though I don't think there's a whole lot there. I really am intrigued by that ending. As the camera pulls back and we see them, I'm saying to myself, well, maybe
where do they end up?
Yeah, where does this go?
Yeah.
It almost feels to me as if they're stuck with each other and they're going to make the best of it.
Maybe.
I mean, Sam goes up and embraces him. And not that he has been overly attentive to either of the kids, but I thought it was an interesting point where she's sitting with mom and brother, and Law is clearly, I mean, that in that design, he's there and they are looking at him, and he's going to have to justify himself. But she comes up and embraces him, and then it kind of ends without really telling us what's going to happen to the family.
It's a very ambiguous ending.
It is
so
indeed.
If you do not like ambiguity, right. Don't watch this film.
Mary, the only thing I was thinking about, he did pay the rent for the year.
Yes.
So they're not going to have to get out of there.
No.
But boy, are they going to have to figure out what they're going to do.
And they're going to have to fix up that house after the party. That was some party.
Well, I always have thoughts of like, how do they heat a place like that?
Yeah. Well, and we haven't talked about Carrie Coons in this conversation.
Yes, please
either.
Do. Oh,
and,
yes, thank you.
She was a new discovery for me in this film. And going up against Jude Law, who can really hold the camera's attention, even if he's not center frame.
Yes.
She does an amazing job, not only holding the camera without even sometimes any dialogue, but also just her character was written in such a way that she's really the crux of the film.
Thank you. Yes.
Her relationship with her husband, her relationship with their children, how she interacts with his business colleagues, how she interacts with the townspeople. Even though I'm not sure she has more camera time, she does such a wonderful job with the character of Allison that you feel like the film is really about her.
Yeah, you do feel her presence. We are much more sympathetic to her.
Much more sympathetic.
And so she's there for us to be comforted with her. She's there to let us realize what the patriarchal world can do to a talented, very gifted woman, and I think I mentioned in our previous discussion we had, she has a little bit of a working class toughness about her, but you had pointed out she wasn't bred.
No. And the thing that I think was revelatory of the time in which this was made was at one point to make money, to cough, excuse me.
Sure.
She ends up basically working for a local farmer.
Isn't that a great moment?
And she's got American chutzpah, where in Britain at that time, you wouldn't see, and you may not even see it today, I don't know, but you wouldn't see someone who would be of what they're presenting their class to be, shoveling out manure and hauling hay at a farm. And she is not above doing that, and she makes a statement that this is what she's doing.
I know, she's shoveling it, and it reminds me then of our cabbie, that we have these moments.
She's shoveling it, really, and her husband's shoveling it in another way.
Right. But moments, right, when things are revealed and when characters bluntly say what it is. And then she's had enough at this point. We know she's gone. She's no more putting up with him again. But so where does this all go then, Mary? I mean, what is it? How would anybody in our audience be interested in seeing this film?
Well, one, I think if you're interested in truly top-notch acting, it is worth seeing this film to see Carrie Coons and Jude Law and the supporting actors, including the actors who play the children. It's also an intriguingly put together film in terms of bringing in elements of the thriller, the dark lighting.
Yes, I agree.
The eerie music, where you think something really bad is going to happen. But it makes you think about the family dynamic from 30 years ago, the time frame in which it was made, and that really bad things are happening to these people, but they're internal and they're emotional and they're about their relationships. It's not an easy film to watch, and it's not one that I would recommend if you're not have a mindset for it.
I can recommend it for all those people who think that their Thanksgiving is going to be such a beautiful event. I'm always in for one where the family is just
this, right, and then you'll feel better about your family
and
Thanksgiving.
I agree with you. Back Talk is produced by me, John DeSando. Listen to the shows on the podcast experience at wcbe.org. Thank you, Mary Arena. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, John.
To your husband, Bob.
Thank
my
you
best.
Very much. I hope you and your family have a happy
and
Thanksgiving as well.
We'll watch this first, and then we'll have
you'll feel better about your own life.